Welcome back to another New Era Flames podcast, a proud partner of the New Era Hockey Network. As always, I'm Cam Elder at LZ14, two Zs on Twitter, and joining me through the other side of the screen, it's the Clowfish, Adam Clausen, at Adam Clausen on Twitter. Adam, big week in sports. How are you doing today, this Monday?
I'm absolutely fired up today, boss.
Yeah, it was a big week in sports. There was a lot of things going on. It was Masters week. The Frozen Four went down. It was WrestleMania for all you wrestling fans out there. And it was also a pretty big week leading up to the trade deadline, which was today. A lot of trades happened today. So out of those things, Adam, were you able to catch any of the action this past week?
Here and there, a little bit of the Masters. Didn't really religiously watch it. And then just a little bit of the NCAA hockey. UMass beat St. Cloud State 5-0 in the final. First
ever. No, they're kind of an upset to get there, right?
Yeah, just in total, they beat Duluth in the semifinal, so that in itself was an upset. So it's good on them that they made it that far and they pulled the upset. It's always a good story.
Absolutely. Anything else catch your eye this last week?
No, I didn't really. I just the 5-0 loss that the Oilers took on Saturday there. That was kind of.
Yeah, we'll get to that coming up.
That was the big event for me this weekend, and that was absolutely fantastic as an Oilers fan.
Yeah, well, you know myself, I'm a little bit of a wrestling fan, so I caught most of WrestleMania. It's like two nights now. They've split it up from just the Sunday, so it's like 8 hours of wrestling. I'm not going to watch it all, and I was out at the cabin Saturday. So, you know, I caught most of it. Masters, missed Saturday, Friday we work in. So, you know, I had it on the TV all Sunday. It's not as exciting to me if the big names aren't up at the top, and, you know, there's no Tiger either. So I didn't watch it as closely as I usually do, but I watched it, and it was good. I'm happy for Matsuyama, you know, big win.
Yeah, for sure.
Other than that, you know, the big trade deadline, a lot of trades were happening leading up to the day. It wasn't as busy of a day, but we kind of thought that was going to be the case, you know, with all the COVID and the flat cap happening. So with that, and the trade deadline has come and gone, Flames made a couple moves. We'll get there. But Adam, in your eyes, any big movers, shakers, winners, losers that you saw with this trade deadline?
First off, I got to definitely go with the Washington Capitals as a loser. I know what they're going for in trading for Anthony Mantha. I understand that, but I feel like they got fleeced in that deal. They get Jacob Vrana, who, like you said, we were talking about this a little earlier. He's outscoring Mantha, so there you go. You kind of already won the trade there. Mantha's a big body, like that's more of a playoff-esque player. And then you got Richard Panik, and you got a first-round pick and a second-round pick, all for Anthony Mantha. I think that was an absolute steal of a deal for Detroit.
And you know what? Mantha's got – he makes, you know, 5.7 mil, and I think he's got another 3-4 years on his contract too. Like, he just signed a contract. So that's also some money in term they're bringing on there in Washington.
Yeah, and I don't know what it is with Vrana and the Capitals, but there's always seemed to be like something that's not right. There's always been talks about getting rid of him, shipping him away. I don't know if something happened deep within the organization that a Caps fan could tell me, but it's always been like, let's get rid of Vrana. There's not really any, not to my knowledge. It's just kind of always been floating out there, and they finally did it, and I think they lost the deal. So it's unfortunate.
That's a lot to give up. Like you said, a first, a second, Vrana, and who was the other guy?
Richard Panik.
Oh, yeah, Panik. Yeah, so, I mean, that's one loss. How about a winner? You got a winner for us today?
Well, Detroit, that would be a win. You got... a winner. I don't know. I don't really have. I thought there was a lot of like mid-tier trades. In my opinion, there wasn't like a out-and-out winner. I guess some people might look at Boston because of the big name and Taylor Hall, and it was relatively cheap. But I wouldn't say there was someone that came and swept up and got like two or three of the big name, like the big guys on the trade deadline. So I think all in all, it was, there's more losers and there's people that are neutral than winners. I know that Ottawa got Victor Mete off waivers, which is actually a pretty good deal for sure. And they dropped Gudbranson, so that's $4 million cap gone. I don't know if they retained. I didn't see that part yet, but still, they shipped him out. I think as per winners, Vegas got quite a bit today, and Detroit, of course, like I said already, and then Chicago did a lot of moves. Just kind of seemed like 50-50 swaps. Hope this guy's better than this guy type deal. Maybe they got some picks and like a second.
Yeah, almost like some house cleaning moves there.
Exactly. Like let's give this guy a shot instead of this guy. This guy's not working. Let's give this guy a shot. But to that point, I think it's kind of funny. I didn't think anyone was going to trade with the Vancouver Canucks because of the COVID situation and the first trade with Gaudette going to Chicago. All the comments on my Instagram were like, well, there goes Chicago's chances. They got the COVID now. So, yeah, what do you think? What did you think about the trade deadline?
It was a tough deadline to move pieces for sure. I kind of agree with you. I thought the Red Wings made out like bandits on that Mantha deal, bringing up some cap space, some term, and I mean, they got a haul for him. We touched on it. Vrana is actually a really good player. So is Panic. So definitely they're kind of my winners. I kind of, have our own boys, the Flames, as a winner. I thought, get rid of two UFAs, a backup goalie, and a fourth, third liner for a second, a prospect who was a second round pick last year from Florida, and also a third. So I actually had Calgary, coming out as a winner in this from everyone who did. Losers, I mean, I agree with you. The Caps, they didn't get a good look. Another winner, I might say, sorry to bring it back, but Toronto, I thought, actually did some. Yeah. They paid a high price for a lot of the stuff they did. But, I mean, as a roster and just putting together those guys, like, that's going to make for a big push. They feel, they have their best chance of getting to the cup going through this Canadian division and feel they're going to the final four. So, they're beefing up their bottom six and getting a lot of vet players in there. I mean, they paid a high price. I think second highest price that was paid this trade deadline. But I actually have Toronto. We'll have to see how it works here in the short future for this year's playoff run, but they're kind of up there as a winner, just paid a lot. Losers, you have Washington, St. Louis stayed pat. I think they didn't do much.
No.
People were kind of thinking they were going to move Hoffman, kind of not, maybe trying to bring in another piece. And then, our provincial rivals, I kind of have Edmonton almost as a loser myself as well, because they did – they're also in that same spot as Toronto right now. It's kind of like the easiest path to get to the final, I believe, or the final four going through this Canadian division. They've been looking good all year. And they don't have the dollars per se, but they had some assets, and all they do is pick up the one veteran defenseman. What'd you see coming out of Edmonton today? I thought they kind of, in a year where they couldn't have loaded up because of where they are, but
yeah,
they could have done something a little bit more this trade deadline, I feel.
Yeah, it was a little bit disappointing, but I'm not a huge fan of Dmitry Kulikov, and I hope he proves me wrong. I think if it does come to the third round draft pick, I think it's an overpay personally. If you look at his analytics, they're not flashy or nothing like that. He's not a flashy player. It's just another guy that you now force Bouchard out of the lineup for as well. And the beginning of the deadline, leading up to it, I was telling you, I'm like, oh, the boys are going to get Ekholm. We're going to get Glendening. We're going to bring back Gags. We're going to get Gagne back. We're going to get all these guys. Nothing
happened. Yeah, Edmonton had a fat wish list.
Even Alexiak. I would have totally prefer just straight up third round pick, Jamie Oleksiak, here you go, than a fourth, a conditional fourth, which will turn into a third if we win a playoff round. And then it's basically just paying Jamie Oleksiak, the much better, bigger 6'7" defenseman, to just come and play for us. I just thought personally it was a little.
What did he go for? I know he went to Vegas. What did he end up going for?
Pretty sure he went for a third. So, like, why not just give the third up? I know we don't have it our third this year. Thank you, Calgary.
Thank you, James Neal.
Yeah, and, you could have thrown next year's third. Like, I just thought Kulikov was, like you said to me, he wasn't on anyone's radar, and he was definitely not on my radar, and I don't know why he was.
Who's he taking out of the lineup for you guys now? He's coming in. I'm expecting this guy's going to be in the top six pair or D-men. So, like, who's he taking out? Caleb Jones. I'm guessing one of those two.
Probably a Jonesy, but like Jones is Jones was just on 1260 TSN 1260 talking about how he and Ethan are getting a really good chance right now to be a pair together. So you're just going to knock that off right away, and then you got Kulikov, you got Russell, and you have Cuckoo, who's actually on pace to come back faster than originally anticipated. So you're going to have the playoff depth with injuries, but in my opinion, we still definitely came out as losers.
Yeah. So Calgary shipping off some parts today. You know, sad to see him go. Rittich, Sam Bennett. I feel like they got a pretty good haul for it. So we'll start with the Rittich deal. I feel like, again, Toronto feels like they're in a spot to make a push for this thing. They got no Frederik Andersen for the foreseeable future, so they wanted to shore up that backup goaltending. They must have felt that Hutchinson, just in case Campbell does go down and during this push or in the playoffs. And Campbell does have, a history of injuries, so it's possible.
Yeah.
So they feel the need to go out and shore up their goaltending. They come knocking on our door and they flip us a third for Rittich. Rittich was a UFA at this end of the year. I don't think the Flames are, in all honesty, going to be able to sign him. I mean, we're already paying quite a price tag with him and Markstrom in our net. So, I mean, you don't want to be paying your backup goalie too much, and to lose him for nothing would kind of suck. So it kind of made sense for both teams. Toronto gets their man in case anything happens to Campbell. You know, instead of losing Ritter for nothing, we pick up a third. I thought it was a good trade for the Flames. I'm sure Louis Domingue or Zagadoulin will come up, play backup for the rest of the season. Right now, I think it's only Louis Domingue on the taxi squad, so he's probably coming up, or he's probably there. We got some games coming up this week, so we're going to need him with a back-to-back. Fish, what did you think about that first trade with Toronto, Rittich for the third?
Well, I think, like you said, Toronto did really good. They somehow got the NHL to retain 75% of Foligno's salary, and he's a natural-born leader. But with Rittich, I really think that's third is honestly a best-case scenario. Like, I had him going with just maybe a spring cleanup, little flip. Let's try Rittich for Vanacek type thing, just to see, like, hey, let's try these guys in different places. So that third, for sure, definitely would be, in my opinion, a very good deal for Rittich on an expiring contract. And then,
which you probably weren't re-signing him.
We don't know exactly, but we're leaning towards he's probably not going to re-sign here. You got a lot of young
goalies. The numbers aren't going to work, right? We're already paying $6 million to Markstrom. You can't be paying $3-3.5-4+ for the backup goalie. So, I mean, getting a third for him, I think, really worked out. And, a fun little tidbit with Rittich, actually, I learned the other day. He was actually found by a Flames scout, Derek McKinnon, stumbled upon him, going to scout a guy by the name of Daniel Preibel. This was back in 15-16. And Daniel Preibel never got signed by the Flames, but we did sign that one random goalie that caught McKinnon's eye, and that goalie ended up to be David Rittich. Now, they brought him in to be a stacking horse, per se, to push John Gillies in the AHL, who's never flourished, who's another highly Flames-touted goal prospect. He actually ended up outplaying Gillies and coming up to the main roster in Calgary, giving us 130 games. We loved his emotion. I'll always remember the stick flip. And we took that little scouting mission, flipped it for a third. I see that as a complete win for the Flames on that first trade they did today.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I totally agree with that. And to touch on the Sam Bennett deal, they actually were looking to draft the prospect. His name was Emil Heineman. They are actually wanting to draft him in the draft, but Florida picked him 7 picks before them. So basically, they're getting the guy they wanted and a draft pick now. So they got the guy they wanted in the draft, and they get another second-round pick, and they get, like, they... I think it was good, like good deals all around. Nothing big, nothing no. blockbustery, but both deals, it's fair to say that, and easy to say that you won the deals. Like they're not.
Well, I mean, in the Bennett, right? The Bennett deal, I think Florida did really good getting Bennett for a 2022 second round pick. So I thought Florida actually did pretty good. They're playoff bound. They've loaded up a couple of guys. We know playoff Bennett. He's going to go there and help. I wish him nothing but the best. I'm going to be watching Florida games now because that's where playoff Bennett will be. So I thought Florida actually made a good deal. And like you said, you know, we get a second in 2022 and we get the Florida's second round pick from last year, which I believe was 43rd overall. And as you touched on there, Flames are actually eyeing this guy up in last year's draft. So, you know, kind of a nice win for them again. And the way I look at it, they got more for Sam Bennett than Buffalo got for Taylor Hall.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Like, how is that not a win?
I look at that as Bjork, maybe as a fringe top six player, but I'm going to say, like, he's a good top nine forward. Like, you get Bjork and a second for Taylor Hall, who's supposed to be the biggest piece in this whole entire trade deadline, and then you just flip Sam Bennett for pretty much 2 second round picks is what we're going to look at it as, seeing as he was drafted 43rd overall this prospect
just last year. Absolutely.
And actually, to touch on the prospect, that he draws comparisons to Zach Hyman and like the way he plays and the way he thinks the game, like his determination and his effort. So that's going to be a good little player to have coming up in the prospect pool too.
Another trade that caught my eye actually was the Penguins going out and getting Jeff Carter.
Yeah.
Now there's some, you know, more cup experience, another proven winner on the back nine of his career, but he's coming over to help Pittsburgh push. That's full of a couple winners themselves. So I actually had my eye on that trade. I thought that was a pretty good trade for Pittsburgh.
Yeah, and like cash in when you can.
Yeah, exactly. A conditional third and a conditional fourth. And I believe they're 2022 and 2023 picks. So nothing off the top right away. Mm. Yeah, Carter comes in. I think, the Kings retain 50% of his salary. So makes the money fit. So that was another trade that I had my eye on, actually.
And to touch on some more winners, I think Columbus is actually really well set out for this first round, because now with their pick, they're roughly around the 7th pick with their own pick. And they also have the rights to Tampa Bay's 28th overall pick. And then they also now have the rights to Toronto's 30th overall pick. So they have 3 in the first round, which they can definitely... Like I said, this draft is all over the place for their prospects. Like I've seen guys that are ranked 3rd in some people's as low as like 24th, or people that are 10. I've seen Gunther go first overall. I've seen Gunther at 10. It's all over the place.
Yeah, it's I know for the Flames, I think they got 5 picks in the top 3 rounds next year, and then in 2022 they got another 5 picks in the top 3 rounds. So looking to fill the cupboards there for the Flames. A couple of those picks acquired here just this last week, so that's always nice to see. So there was one Flames game since our last episode through the week, a 5-0 thrashing of our rivals, the Edmonton Oilers. And we finally saw the Johnny Monty split. And how better to start it off with Monahan scoring the first goal, Johnny getting the second, Gio and Tanev were playing together, Rasmus is with Hanifin, Valiant Stone looks solid, Markstrom posts a shout. Fish, what did you see in that Battle of Alberta game Saturday night? Because I was amped over the lines, the results. I mean, we got a lot more wins to get if we're going to go anywhere this year. But, man, just seeing them lines was something that jacks the guy up.
Oh, I definitely got excited, too, because we probably predicted about 75% of that lineup change to happen. And look what happened.
Like
you get Monty on the board. Exactly. You get Monty on the board. You get Johnny on the board. And, like, they're flying. They looked like – I honestly looked like a different team out there to me personally. They had all the energy in the world out there. I thought Magny's line was amazing as well. I did hope that Chucky was on the second line, but I thought Chucky played really good with that first pairing. Like, it's hard to not play good with Lindy and Goudreau, but and I also really liked the Hanifin Razzie line. The Hanifin directly contributed to one of the goals. He was behind the goal line, put a nice pass in. So yeah, I don't know. You shake the roster up and good things happen, right?
Yeah, definitely got some nice results out of those new lines. I like Chucky staying with Lindholm because in the preseason, all the talk was about that new duo. So, I mean, you put Johnny Goudreau on that left wing of that hot duo and, you know, fire's bound to happen. You know, it was nice to see. I thought Mangiapane, as always, he was all over it Saturday night. That guy was in every scrum. Like, he probably could have scored 3-4 goals even. Like, just an outstanding game from Magny. Monahan looked a little fleeter of foot, maybe a little shot in the arm from the coach, finally splitting him and Johnny up. I mean, just up and down the roster, it looked great. You know, you had that fourth line on Saturday. It was Bennett, Ryan, Richie. Bennett's now gone. I think it's as simple as you bring Josh Levo back off the taxi squad. He either plays on that third line with Paklin and Lucic, and you drop Nordstrom down to the fourth, or it's as simple as Levo just slides on into where Bennett was there on the left wing of that fourth line. But I like the look of these lines. I'd like to keep them going forward. I want to say I'd shake up the defensive pairings one more time, but until that horse breaks, I think you leave them as is. But I'm just trying to get towards Erasmus and Uso Valimaki pairing. But, you know, would you make any line changes to what you saw Saturday, or you just – outside of the Bennett being gone and Levo or Simon probably slotting in, more likely Levo, any lineup changes you'd make, or would you just roll this now?
I definitely think that I definitely pull out Stone for sure. I think his game was a product. His goal was a product of Magny. So he's just riding that. Get Shillington in, shake the D up, keep Hanifin and Razzie. Just kind of stick to what we've been saying with the D pairings. Just see how it goes. Keep the top six for sure together, and then do what you got to do on the bottom six. And just if you got to shake it up, just find like the right wingers. I'd say keep Lucic and Backlund on the third, and then just find them their winger, whether it be Richie, Nordstrom.
The last week, I would say Nordstrom, you know, he's not a finisher or nothing, but he's been all around it. He's had some good chances. I think he's been playing pretty good, actually.
Oh, yeah, he's definitely riding his confidence, which is good to see because he was snake-bitten for a while there. So it's good to see that he's got some confidence in his game and he's playing like the guy that the Flames signed in the offseason. So, yeah, if you throw him on the third, then that's totally fine. You got Levo Richie on the fourth for the wings it's good. Like they're not flashy. They're just grindy, gritty guys. Throw it at the net.
Both guys that have spent quite a bit of time this year on that Johnny Monty spot. So I mean, they should be half decent fourth liners.
Exactly. Yeah.
And you know what? Levo's got a wicked shot. I could see him moving up to the third line with Backlund and Lucic, and then Nordstrom just drops down to that fourth line with Ryan and finally on the fourth line, Richie.
Yeah, yeah. If Nordstrom's game starts to slip, I definitely see him being a fourth liner. Like, that's kind of all I see in him. But if you want, you can ride his confidence and push him up a line. Like, I don't think he should be anywhere higher than the third line for sure. Same with Levo and Richie. That's why I think it's perfect. That's why I say keep the top six. Don't mess with what Absolutely. You got up there. Maybe a couple of wing swaps. Maybe if something's not running in the game in the top six. But just keep the top six together. Don't split them up. You keep those top two lines together, and you keep the bottom two lines together. But just shake those up. Don't
Absolutely.
Completely blow the roster up. I think what we got here is good right now. So I'd keep that, and then still just fiddle around with the defense a little bit. I really like the Razzie Hanifin duo.
I thought that was a great pairing.
And I
still want to see Razzie and Valley, but that'll come in time. Lots of time for that.
Yeah, I didn't really notice any other defensemen other than Valley. I did notice a couple of times. I noticed he was on the ice contributing when they were scoring, because you could see him go into that circle when they score. So he's on the ice making a difference, and they're scoring. So out of the defensemen, those were the three guys I noticed the most were Valley, Hanifin, and Razzie for sure, which is normal, but more than normal.
One thing I did notice was just how calming of a presence Tanev really is. Like, he had the magic touch to just settle Giordano's game down there on Saturday. I don't think I saw one McDavid blow by Giordano that game, and I'm used to seeing five, six of those a game.
Yeah, and Tanev's super quiet with it too, and he just is so rock solid. You never noticed
him. But you want that out of your blue line. Like, you just want guys you never notice, because if you're noticing them, it's probably for something bad. But I thought he came in and just settled Giordano's game right down. Like, you can keep those two together for the rest of the year, I'm thinking.
Yeah, that proves the point why he got an A already. He hasn't even been here for a season, and they already give him an A.
Man, like, as each week passes by, I just can't believe Vancouver let this guy walk. Like, I never knew he was all this and the bag of chips. Like, this guy's been—he's been the best defenseman for the Flames this year, and Vancouver just lets this guy walk. I can't believe it. I still bug my Canucks friends all the time. Like, why you guys let this guy walk? You're kidding me.
Yeah, especially with the roster that the Canucks have. They have so many young, talented players that need a guy like that. And now you look at their roster, and I don't know who's going to fill the gap for Tanev. And even Markstrom was also kind of a guy for them that really helped. I know I'm pretty sure Petey and Markstrom were pretty tight friends there. So you also have Besser. You have even a Horvat. I don't know how good Horvat is as a captain. I kind of thought that was just kind of out of necessity personally, but I don't know too much about all that. But you're not going to replace a guy like Tanev with someone just already floating in your roster, and they didn't really go out and get someone to replace him. So I thought that was a little bit of a strange move by the Canucks for sure.
And then the last trickle-down effect from the trade deadline, our backup goalie, he's gone. We're going to need a new one. Louis Domingue is right now the only goalie on the taxi squad. So for right now, this time being, I'd imagine Louis Domingue's going to be coming in to back up Markstrom. With that being said, Parsons was called up to the AHL. So that might free up Zagadoulin. Do you think we'll see Zagadoulin down this stretch? Big Z, as we like to call him.
That is a tough topic, because a lot of people have NHL confidence in Louis Domingue, but he's been playing for the Tampa Bay Lightning, and you could throw me in net on the Tampa Bay Lightning, and I could probably post a shutout. So it's not really a super. He's not an amazing backup. He's more of a fringe backup, in my opinion. And it's just really, who do you trust? Do you want to trust a young goalie that's not experienced, or do you throw the guy in like Domingue, who has the experience in the NHL? It's at that point you choose. I personally think they'll probably try it with Zagadoulin first, but in the back of my mind, I think Louis Domingue is probably the good choice down this tough stretch that you have, because you don't want to throw a guy like Big Z into such a heated, pressurized situation in this, like, you have no opportunities to mess up pretty much. Hey,
oh, yeah.
Played five games, don't mess up. You've played less than five games.
The Flames have to play flawless hockey, and they're going to need the help from Montreal. You know, we're going to find out where they stand week by week. This week, looking at it, they got Toronto tomorrow. Then they got a back-to-back the next night against Montreal. And then they play Montreal again on the Friday. So they're playing Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday this week. So obviously we're going to see Louis Domingue one of these games, I'd imagine. You're not going to run Markstrom in the back-to-back, especially coming off an injury or nothing like that. So you're going to at least see Domingue for one of these games. And then that gives you a week buffer to get Big Z up here if that's your move, or you just run Domingue. I have no insider information, but I wonder if they're waiting to see how Louis Domingue plays one of these games this week, which are very crucial. Again, we're chasing Montreal, so we need to win those. We got five games left against them. Two of them are this week. They're currently playing Toronto right now. Last I looked, it's 3-2. For Montreal. It was 2-0 Montreal, so it's kind of looking good for Flames fans. We need Montreal to lose them all. We need Flames to essentially win them all. We finally have some line combos that can do it. Hopefully we have the backup goalie that can back up Markstrom and do it. My only worry now, it's not like the playoff push was top of mind for the Flames, so we just don't have a reliable goalie if anything does happen to Markstrom. If we were to catch fire, go on a run, make it to the playoffs. Like we'd be running a Domingue Big Z combo if anything does happen to Markstrom. So that makes me a little nervous, but I know in the grand scheme of plans, the playoff push wasn't top of mind today. So you put in Louis Domingue, like you said, he's an experienced goalie. Guys are going to be comfortable playing in front of him. Yeah. And I'm sure we'll see what he's got this week.
Oh, for sure. And who knows, maybe they work the taxi squad. I don't know, is Domingue on a two-way or a one-way contract? Two-way, probably?
Oh, he's probably on a two-way.
Yeah, and then Z is probably a two-way as well, I'd assume.
No, so, Big Z's definitely on a two-way.
So you look at that, maybe they just work the taxi squad and they run a three-man rotation just so no one's getting burnt backup-wise. But like you said, throw Domingue in for sure. They know a little bit about Big Z. They haven't played around Domingue, so they don't quite know what to expect. So maybe throw him in for one of these games. I don't know, Toronto, I would say. I'd stick with Markstrom in both of the Montreal games, personally.
So you'd put Domingue in against Toronto?
Depending on who Toronto's goaltender is. They might throw in Hutchinson. Maybe they put in Riddick. So I don't know. It's really dependent on the goal.
There in time. Like with the COVID and the traveling, like I don't know how that works Canada to Canada, but I doubt we see Riddich in the white and blue tomorrow already. But I could be
wrong. That would be awesome. But like say you put in you're the Leafs and you have Hutchinson in net. Or do you want to play Markstrom three games in a row? Have him play the Montreal games, which are very important, and then play him against Hutchinson, or do you want to take your chances in a very tough game against Toronto and play a Domingue or a Z while they're playing their backup? Because Campbell's known for getting injured, so they're probably going to want to give him a little bit of a break so he can run this streak he's on and keep it.
Now they got a goalie in Riddich who can pick up the games and still help him compete for the division.
Exactly.
So with Louis Domingue, just looking up his numbers quick, he hasn't played an NHL game since 1920. He played 17 games split between the Devils and the Canucks.
Oh, wow. See, I didn't even know that.
882 save percentage. Not the greatest. This year in the AHL, I think he's played four games. He's played three games, with an 859 save percentage and a 4.04 goals against. So
in the AHL?
In the AHL this year, for the Stockton Heat. So not looking great on those numbers, but again, we have no choice. We're going to have to play him once this week, I'd imagine. There's no way you're playing Markstrom all three of these games. I believe I would go Markstrom, Domingue, Markstrom. you play Markstrom against Toronto. They got the firepower. You play Domingue against Montreal. They're a little beat up, not as flashy, not as much firepower. So you give Domingue Montreal, and then Markstrom comes back on Friday and plays Montreal again. That's how I'm deploying them this week. These are all must wins.
Yeah.
Every week is, but looking ahead, Toronto, Montreal, Montreal, Markstrom, Domingue, Markstrom. If Domingue doesn't play well, I'm sure wheels are already in motion to get Big Z up here.
Yeah, and Montreal helped the cause a little bit too. They also lost on Saturday, so that's a big swing. And these two games are going to be a crucial swing and can really shake it up in this race here. So it's, I'm not the coach, but I definitely, I would want to have a rested Markstrom for one of the games, depending on what you want.
To paint the picture, as we stand right now, the Canadians have three games in hand on the Flames, and they're up 6 points. So that's a lot of work for Calgary to do, but, I mean, it starts with winning your own games, and they play Montreal five more times here, so that's 5 4-point games. That's 10 points up for grab you can gain on Montreal just by winning all them. And if Montreal loses all those because they lost to you as they're playing you, 4-point game, that's a big swing, but Montreal's also got those three games in hand, so we're going to need a little help from the Canadian division and just the Flames. At the end of the day, we could talk about all these possible lanes that the Flames can take to the playoffs. It doesn't matter if they don't start winning. It started Saturday, big 5-0 win against the Oilers. Some new fresh lines. I really hope that stays clicking forward going together. But we're going to see this week here with these games as they play out.
Yeah, for sure. And Montreal is like, Montreal's a very, they're an enigma this year. They'll, and it's happened with every team, but Montreal, a lot of teams undervalue the work ethic that they have, and they go out there and they're like, oh, this is an easy win. And then turns out Montreal had their chicken and rice before the night before for dinner, and they're all fueled up. So they come out and absolutely steamroll you, and you look like an idiot out there. So it's, you really got to be focused for these games against Montreal. Like, you can't be caught flat-footed. You got to come out of the gates flying. Nothing like that one warm-up the Flames had. It needs to be peak performance. Do not hit each other with the puck. Don't run into each other. You guys got to be flying out there. Ed's in the game.
Yeah, Montreal's playing Toronto today. Right now they're up 3-2. Hopefully Toronto can bring that back. Then they play the Flames twice this week, and then they got Ottawa on Saturday. So, you know, to keep the hope alive, like, these four-game stretches with Montreal, we need them to go 1-3 every four games. 0-4 would be great, but if they're going to win, hopefully it's only one game. If they go 1-3 their next four, they're essentially every four-game set, leaving those 6 points on the table that they're ahead of the Flames right now. So we need some big-time Montreal losses going forward. But like I said, right off the top, all these paths don't matter unless the Flames can start winning. And it's going to be a big week here, and they need these two against Montreal. And then we get them again next week. So in 2 weeks, we're really, really going to have a picture of where the Flames are at. It doesn't look great right now, but when you look at it, you're only 6 points out playing some of your worst hockey you've played. You look back on Saturday, you know, what have you done for me lately? They had a hell of a game. So hopefully they got more of those Saturday games in them than they have this other season. Because the way I look at it, it's been no secret. The Flames have had pretty much a horrid season. With all that being said, with everything going wrong, with being sellers at the deadline, at the end of the day, you're still only 6 points out. It's not an impossible hill to climb. Especially if you're going to have more games like you did on Saturday. So if you had to ballpark maybe a percentage of the Flames sneaking into the playoffs, what percent would you give them, Fish?
I actually have seen some of these things. It's pretty grim, the wheel of the make to the playoffs for each team. But if we come out good this week with Montreal beating Montreal, even if they pull a win out against the Maple Leafs and Montreal ends up losing their other games as well, I at this point in time, I'd give it no more than the 15% chance, not to be grim or anything like that. But
yeah, that's more than I was going to give them.
That's my high point. I've seen as low as 3%, so I'm going to keep it optimistic, and that's based off this week goes perfect, pristine, and squeaky
clean. So let's say the Flames make the playoffs. If they made the playoffs, they'd be coming in like a raging bull on absolute fire. Do you want any part of that team? They'd be sneaking in fourth. Like, do you want to be first?
Exactly. Yeah, you got – well, and I'm – if I'm Toronto and you have all these old guys like Joe Thornton, who's going to break a rib every time you throw him into the boards, coming up against this raging bull that just came out of nowhere, I'd be a little scared for sure. And Jack Campbell, he's pulling a Binnington right now. He's not proven. He can fall at any point and just become the goalie that he actually has shown for his whole entire NHL career. So it's not necessarily safe. If Jack Campbell falls, then your starter's Rittich now. So there's always a chance for a playoff collapse in any player. And I'm just saying it would probably be Jack Campbell if it happened. And there's a very good chance that I think the Flames could beat that team.
Oh yeah. I mean, hey, I don't, honestly, in the heart of hearts, really believe it. But until we're right out of it, I'm always going to keep it optimistic. You know, I don't got no loser's mentality. So, hey, if we make this, we made it because we caught fire. And if we're entering the playoffs on fire, playing like we did Saturday, and to your point, like you said, you know, if we go against Toronto and they got this old bottom six, like they're going to want nothing of our bottom six.
Yeah, you got to
feast on them. But hey, we're not there yet.
No.
Yeah, we're not there yet. We still got to win a lot.
Yeah.
But hey, it's doable, Flames Nation. We're not quite dead yet. No matter what Oiler fans are telling you, 2 weeks ago, they did not end our playoff chances. They're not over yet. And I really hope we make them eat those words. But with all that being said, we're coming up to it. It's another edition of the Battle of Alberta question. For this one's going to be a two-parter, first part. So for you, Adam, your favorite Oiler who was a former Flame, and then in your opinion, your most effective Oiler who was a former Flame. And I'll answer the same, my favorite former Oiler who became a Flame, and then in my opinion, the former Oiler who I thought actually had the best career in Calgary. So I'll let you start off, Fish. Either your favorite or your most effective. I don't know your answers to this question, so I'm listening. All yours, buddy.
Well, looking at this, there wasn't very many coming from the Flames to the Oilers that I thought were superb. I thought you guys have kind of won each of these trades, that the cross-pond trades. You guys have the better careers coming off the guys coming from Edmonton going to Calgary. But to keep it in this day and age, you got Mike Smith is probably so far been one of our most effective guys that we've gotten from you guys. You got Chiasson as well. Chiasson is very, very streaky, and he always has been. He's okay to put on the power play, but I don't see him as a first line power play guy. You put him on the second line power play, and he just doesn't get the same feeds that he gets from the guys like Dreisaitl, McDavid, Nuge, Barry, a Nurse if he's out there. So I'd have to give most effective, just based off this season really, to Mike Smith. And then favorite, I know it's boring, but I'll probably also pick Mike Smith, because I just think he's such a natural born leader, and he's really, they say it every single Oilers game that Mike Smith's the best athlete you'll ever see. He put a beat down on Cam Talbot in that goalie fight. He's such a character. He makes it so much easier for our defensemen to do things. They themselves say that when a puck's dumped in on Smitty, if it's a tough puck, then maybe we'll support him. If it's coming to him on the ground, then we already know to just go to the corners and he'll pass us the puck. So it's like playing with a third defenseman.
Saw that in Calgary. He kills dump and chase. Like, that whole tactic, he just kills it.
Yeah,
he'll go back to that puck and get it up to his defense before you've even crossed the blue line. Exactly. Like, Mike Smith, head and shoulders, obviously, for playing the puck, great. And he actually, off the top of my head, probably would have been my pick for your most effective Flame who became an Oiler. Yeah. I haven't looked at the list, but off the top of my head, he was probably going to be my pick.
He also can catch a whole entire team on a line change with the strength of his pass for a full ice pass to get power play back into the zone, which is, you see it almost every time we have a power play. He's scored a goal, so that says something about his handling with his stick. It's like once in a lifetime. Not once in a lifetime, but he's up there, honestly.
Another thing that he does with the playing of the puck so quick, you know, that's a lot of miles saved on your defenseman, you know. Like, that's, you know, if they dump the puck in 60 times a game and Mike Smith's playing 50 of them, that's only 10 times your blue liners have to go back there and take a hit to make a play, you know. Like, Mike Smith also saves miles on your blue line just from getting the puck up before the forecheck can even get there, you know. Defensemen aren't taking 60 dump and chase hits a game because Mike Smith's playing 50 of them before they even get a chance to get on the forecheck. So that's another thing I find Mike Smith does by playing. He just saves miles.
Yeah, exactly. And like, there's been games where teams rely heavy on the dump and chase, and the games are honestly boring to watch because all that Smith does is kills it for them. So it's just Oilers, 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 Oilers. There's no like, are we going to get scored on? Are we going to get scored on? Unless it's coming from something that's not a dump and chase, Smith just kills it, and they don't know what to do. They literally have to change their whole entire game plan. So that's what I think would be for both of them personally, because honestly, there isn't a lot that come to the top of my head right now that are super great. I do have an all-time great for both teams personally, most effective, Chris Versteeg, the PTO god. I personally think he was the greatest Edmonton Oiler and Calgary Flames player you will ever get to see.
Oh, yeah, I forgot he took a couple shifts out of practice for the Oilers. You know what? You guys really missed the ball not signing him there. He actually turned out pretty good for Calgary. Great leader guy, too. Like, he's a character. I loved Versteeg. Thanks for bringing him up. I totally forgot about him.
I got one more to touch on. The goal scorer aficionado, Toby Reeder. That would be my last guy. Toby Reeder's a stud as well. You can't forget about Toby.
Nah, Toby did good for us. I got nothing bad to say about Toby. For me, myself, I mean, both these were pretty easy for me. They're not the same guy, being a boring answer. So for me, my favorite, this one was easy. It was Laddie Schmid. That guy was awesome. And I mean, I have a soft spot for any defenseman that can twilight up on your fourth, third line and get in on the forecheck and play some wing. So Laddie Schmid, Strudwick, I see you. Yeah. So Laddie Schmid, easy. That guy was a great interview. He was a character. He was a shot blocking machine back in his day. He used twilight and third, fourth line, getting in there, banging on the forecheck. That guy was awesome. By far my favorite. And then our most effective, this one was also kind of easy for me, Curtis Glencross. Like, let's rewind back to how we got him. It was something to do with you guys didn't want to give him an extra $500,000 raise because you wanted to give flipping Ryan Smith to keep standing in front of the net in his twilight of his career and take a couple more pucks off his teeth to score. Like, that one for you, Curtis Glencross had an amazing career as a Flame. And yeah, I can't believe you guys. Yeah, it was like 500,000 or $750,000. They just couldn't come to terms with the deal. So he came across the highway too, down to Calgary. We gladly paid him, and hell, he provided some great seasons for Calgary. He was great in the community. Hell, he was there 7 years. He had a 26-goal season, 24-goal season. He only had two seasons where he was a negative player. Just all around beauty. This was hands down. This was an easy pick for me. Both these ones are easy for me. Laddie Schmid, Curtis Glencross. Good job, Edmonton, letting that guy walk so you can hold on to flipping Ryan Smith. gets me.
I personally would agree with that. I loved Schmid when he was here. I was so sad when he left, and Glenn Cross was, yeah, clear cut. He was definitely a great, great deal for you guys. So I kind of expected you to say those ones. Those ones are probably, if I was in your seat, I would pick that. But it's a no-brainer, honestly, out of those guys. I mean, you might have a different personal opinion on your favorite player, but it's hard to hate Laddie Schmid. Guys, he's great. Awesome.
Honorable mention, Steady Steve, Steve Steos. Guy was also
Steos.
He gave us some solid solid minutes in his time, and Roman Hamrlich as well. There's Hamrlich. Two honorable mentions. I liked Roman Hamrlich as well. He was solid for us. He was actually really solid for you guys too. He was a hell of a defenseman back in his day.
Oh, for sure.
So, Fish, we're about to be closing it up here. So I just want to ask you, Flames play three times before our next episode. You got Toronto, Montreal. What do you think, for the record, what do you think they're going to do here?
So what do you want a WL type deal, a win-loss, or do you want a quick little...
We're going 3-0. We're going 3-0.
There is no other answer. There's no other answer than 3-0. Worst case scenario, honestly, is going to be a 1-2. Best case scenario, I say, is a 2-1. Two wins, one loss. Best case
scenario is 3-0.
Well, yes, of course. You can't lose any of them. But in my mind, if Toronto's on their game, it's going to be a very hard game. But it's been a weird season. So I'm just personally going to say 2-1. I think they're going to lose one, and I hope that they beat the Canadians both the times. But that's why I say worst case scenario, who knows? There's a chance. So it could be grim come next week, but I'm going to say I'll stick with a 2-1, one win against the Canadians, or sorry, two wins against the Canadians, and probably a loss. I think it'd be a close game against the Maple Leafs, a low-scoring game, but you never know. Matthews has been known to have some fiery nights out of the blue, so we'll see. I personally think 2-1 realistically.
I mean, no surprise here. I'm taking the Flames 3-0. Domingue's going to have a hell of a game. But with that, that wraps up another episode. Thanks for joining us. As always, I'm Cam Elder. That's the Clofish, Adam Clawson. Flames Nation, you stay safe and have a good week.
Stay safe.